Blog Talk Radio. This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening. Hello and welcome. I have on the line today LaVon Pettis. Hi, LaVon.
Good morning, Alpha.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for inviting me to your podcast.
Well, I'm glad you called up and you were telling me about your new, the direction you're going and something else that you've added to your portfolio. And we'll talk about that in a few. But first and foremost, I want you to introduce yourself and, you know, tell me a little bit about your background.
My name is LaVon Pettis. This year, I turned 40 years old. I was introduced to the arts through my grandmother. I would say she was the most influential person. I call her Bubby, Miss Jean Kemp-Wright. And my grandmother worked for an art firm, George Siegel and Associates, and I believe George Joseph, yeah. And, you know, it was like an advertising agency. And she was the lead administrator assistant. And so through her, I saw the value of culture. I learned the value of culture. And I also saw the importance of social fabric, the development of it. And people, you know, they had like a lot of clubs and things back in the day. And so through my grandmother, my Bubby, and also just through my family who had social clubs with others on the West Side, I saw the value of building camaraderie and of just being able to have a place where we could all come together, you know, and enjoy ourselves. And oftentimes it was over art and culture and just, you know, like the kickbacks, the gatherings. And that really influenced me in every aspect. And so by the time I was in high school, I had a group of associates and we would throw parties and we would participate in little dance groups. We were more of a female gang than we were, you know, artist, but I guess, you know, we found a way, like, through the art and through us going through some kind of, like, like aggression replacement therapy kind of program for adolescents. We found the arts to be a wonderful outlet for us to express ourselves. And so that theme just continues.
And I think it's something that over the years I've seen transfer to your daughter.
Yeah, definitely. She's grown up exposed to a lot of culture and a lot of art.
And she's recently been one of the youth selected for the 50th anniversary of the Black Creativity Exhibition being held at the Museum of Science and History.
Yeah, so, I mean, she's, because I've worked with so many artists and her exposure to them and us, you know, looking for activities that, she, you know, was artistic in nature for her, her influence is starting to show. So when she gets bored, now she paints. And this is something that she started doing, and now she's got my six-year-old nephew painting as well. And so she's been able to sell her artwork. She spoke at the University of Chicago about, you know, being a kid entrepreneur. we're looking more at how to expand upon that for her. But the piece that she did, she allowed me to name the piece, so I was grateful. But it deals, you know, it was like, I feel like it. She was inspired by seeing, like, Howardina Pindell's work, listening to Howardina talk, you know, like, seeing all this art. And so she came home and she made something.
Well, I think that when I first met Indigo, we were doing some advocacy work with, I was doing creative I was doing creative currency. Almost 10 years ago that I met her, and we were doing an art project at the time. But I also know her when she's hanging out in Miami as you are presenting, you know, artists in temporary installation spaces. And I want to segue into that because I think that the relationship that you had generationally prepares her for the stage that she's on now, but also you as the curator. And here's one of those external sounds that you're going to hear.
It's very ethnographic. It's okay.
There you go. Yeah. So I want to talk to you about your working in, and what does it mean to exhibit in temporary installation spaces outside of the museum? Even though we're talking currently about a museum and the entryway that artists go to get into museum exhibition, what laid the groundwork for that as you were presenting down in Miami? Does that make sense?
Yeah. How did the relationship with Miami develop? You know what? I've really always valued and appreciated the hospitality of South Floridians. From being at a very young age visiting there, and then once I got older, going down there and it all being solely based off of, someone reached out to me, I believe Jemani Namdi, and it was about a project activation that he was interested in doing. Now, the location that he initially proposed, the event didn't happen there, and we ended up in Overtown. But I felt like we brought some things of value to Overtown, and that Overtown gave us the an opportunity to really, you know, launch and build relationships in the Miami market. And so most of those relationships have continued, and we've been in several different places and partnered with several different groups in that at Miami experience. So we started with Art Africa, and then we went over to Coconut Grove to, Krona Gallery?
Yes.
And then
yes.
This year I was in South Beach at the Gates Hotel with the Muse Art Fair, and it's curated by Q Sims. It was a wonderful experience because Q's name was one of the first people when the whole Art and Design Miami was first brought to my attention. The first year I came down there, that was the year we came down there, and it was me, you, and Najjar, and we hung out at all the BET thing. Remember when Najjar was showing with Naji over in Wynwood?
Yes. One
and
of
it
the
was
great
like a
masters.
Celebrity.
Right. And it was like a celebrity art series. So that series, I never met who the curator was for that. But her name just kept coming up as one of the innovators of that scene down there, Q Sims, along with, I can't leave out, Ronnie and Doreen. Rest in peace to Ronnie, who passed last year. But there were some women, Ronnie Cruz, there were some women, I think, who were really key in that market, and men of the Miami network, and just really opened some doors and always gave us opportunities and like, hey, okay, we're going to take a risk right here. We're going to penny pinch all our little resources together just to get down there. You know, sometimes I had to sleep on the beach, you know, other times, you know, I had accommodations. I mean, I always had accommodations that came out of it, but you know, like, and sometimes you just, I think with the whole Miami thing, you just want to get there, you know, and a lot of people, make their plans on the back end. And so, you know, that's something that I've been thinking about a lot, something that I've been writing about. I think that within the arts, a lot of people are experiencing burnout right now. And I say that because it seems that it's so much more about the party. And in keeping up with all these parties and all these events, or, you know what I'm saying, all of these places to be, especially during like Art Design Week, I feel like not enough people are taking the time to like enjoy the beach while we're there. Like this year, I had to convince an associate to go to the beach with me, and we were right there. Like, our hotel was right there, you know, on the main drive at Collins Avenue.
When I was there, I went to the beach. I had no issue. I went to the beach in my dress. Oh my, you know what I mean? Right there. And, you know, so I didn't go last year, but the other years I was right there on the beach, right there. But, you know, we're going to talk, that's a whole nother conversation about, you know, trying to get into that scene. And so I kind of want to segue into keeping in mind that conversation, and let's leap into you just finished a business academy. And I want to ask you the question, what is an artist and makers community business academy cohort? What is that? Wow. When I saw you post that you graduated from that, and I felt like, what? Let me look online and try to find that program. And but I want to ask you about that program. What is it? And what does that mean for your career?
Okay. Wow. So the Community Business Academy came out of a concept that was started by a woman out of New Jersey called Rising Tide Capital. And this woman had seen her mother, who was an immigrant, really sustain her family by running her own like sewing business. And so she thought about the sacrifices that her mother had taken and all that it took for her mother to have to be an entrepreneur. And so she launched a program to empower entrepreneurs, but creative entrepreneurs. And so this program was launched in my neighborhood in a collaboration between Rebuild Foundation and an affiliate of the Moody Bible Institute, Sunshine Ministries. And so they brought this opportunity, like Sunshine started off in Cabrini Green, but now they're in Woodlawn, like off of 61st Street. And so they've been there, I think, for maybe about 15 years or so. And they pretty much, they have that quarter there from maybe like Eberhard to something, you know. But again, it's, so they had had this community business academy, I guess, for several years, because when Barack Obama was president, he spotlighted the work of this Rising Tide Capital and this community business academy, and he suggested that it become a blueprint in other cities to encourage entrepreneurship. And so they had run, you know, several groups dealing with construction and all kinds of other business ventures, bakers and, you know, people that do cleaning, deep cleaning to your house. And so this was their first inaugural artists and makers focused group. And so the academy takes you through a 12-week boot camp. It reminds you of a corporate retreat of some kind, where you are doing homework assignments as well as simulations, business simulations, and going through everything that it takes to run and sustain a business. And looking at the model that you either have or would like to launch, and trying to do a real-world analysis of what would it take for the first 3 years to make that business successful. And so they bring in various speakers from the community, various graduate alumni of the program. And so we were the 48th cohort, this Artists and Makers series. The classes were held over at the Stony Island Art Bank once a week. There were homework assignments as well as a lot of group business, you know, engagement activities. And they would send us on, you know, to out into the world to get, you know, real results of what it would take for our business. This company, I mean, this project was very, it taught me so much. I mean, in that 12 weeks, it was not easy. My group won 3 of the 4 business simulations. For a majority of the time, all of my homework was in on time. I probably missed 2 classes, one because of my trip to Miami and then recovering from my trip to Miami. So it gave me a lot of opportunity to present.
And everyone that has went to Miami knows it's a recovery time, it's a downtime, because that is so intensive. And that's why I skipped over it, because we can.
Yes. Excuse me, I was going to say, well, people from Miami don't even, from South Florida, don't even want to talk about December until, like, you know, September. Because that's how much energy and that it takes, you know, to sustain that. But again, I think if we got more into the leisure activities, because there's a lot of leisure that's available to us while we're there. But again, we're trying to exhibit and curate and project manage and put out all the little fires from, you know, clients who don't know how to share and play well with others and who decide to act up.
So these, to me, are the real world. I don't know if you, in your curriculum and in your simulations, did you use your real world experience? And maybe let me back the question up. How many people that were in your groups have real world experiences in arts and culture?
I think that everyone had experiences within their own way. Like there was one of the instructors make shoes and as well as like purses, handbags. There was a young lady in the class, Dana Pope Todd was in the class. There was another lady who made jewelry and things like that. There was some chemists in the class. There was an engineer in the class, you know. So there were all kinds of people producing products for the creative industry, and how that overlaid with, you know, being a full-time entrepreneur, because everyone was looking at, you know, a lot of the people came from the corporate world, and that was really interesting to me, and we're looking at how to transition so that they could have some skin in the game for everything that they were producing. So that was really telling. You know, and everyone came with a unique set of skills, and they brought a lot of expertise and knowledge to the table in their own ways. But yes, so for my business concept, it was about running a project development and management company. I've had one before. This was another iteration, a new company. And I went into it with a business associate. I used the real world of experience of us building a project that we did launch during Design Miami and around the Art Basel efforts that also included us getting media coverage for Art Basel this year. And it was a very, very intense project with, you know, a client who, again, I'm going to be candid here, and this has happened multiple times, and it can always happen when you're dealing with a sponsor or a client. When your client decides to go off the rail of what the project is actually supposed to be and gets down there and gets a little too big-headed and then starts, you know, acting up. And then you're like, no.
And we all know what acting up means, right?
You're right. So you're in Miami, you got sleep deprivation, the person's been partying and enjoying themselves and had the time of their life. And then they come down, right? And when that coming down happens, then they want to have a whole shit show and then try to back out of the agreement. And so these are the things that project management is about, you know, about keeping a project within, making sure your deliverables are met, applying the knowledge and the skills. So it takes a lot with that. However, I feel like in each circumstance that I've been in, different markets, wherever I've been in the world, that I've gone beyond expectation in meeting and delivering the materials for the client. So our client got a lot of exposure, and, you know, she just didn't know how to handle all of it. And
well,
that happened.
Well, because, you know, your background, even to begin the conversation, your background blends psychology and sociology into the world of creative professionals. So you already know that, you know, and I don't know why we, and I'm an artist as well, you know, are always put into these categories of crazy. And I use crazy as a broad term in terms of our creativeness.
You said
that,
not me.
Our creative thing. I know, but
right.
You know, that's just a slang word that it encapsulates all forms of, we can go there, right? And
right.
It is our creative mind or energy or whatever is going on that takes over. I call it that spirit that takes over. But you have this skill set, you know, where your background in, again, psychology and sociology helps you kind of screw and get around and bring back your client base. Am I right
well,
for looking
you.
At it the way
I appreciate you saying that. I mean, my mission is always to be able to, you know, drive a successful business outcome. And, you know, in dealing with that, like you do, you said, you know, when you're dealing with people who are highly creative, there's a bit of madness and genius that comes along with that. You know, talking about the sweat equity and everything that goes into that. I think that's sometimes when, you know, an artist will create something and then not want to, or have created a lot of it and then not want to get it out. Thought they wanted to get it out, but then changed their mind, you know. And so I've had a lot of tactical training in dealing with artists who were geniuses or, you know, are geniuses and just need something to assist them in enabling the right approach for their project and getting it out there and something that they felt comfortable with. So, you know, you do have to rein your horses in sometimes, oftentimes, and really, you know, when you catch someone acting up, hey, stop that, don't do that, you know, because, again, everything is based on relationships, right?
And you already know, if you haven't did your due diligence and visited the artist studio that you're representing and been a part of that process before you launch them big time, you already know that you're going to run into those roadblocks. We have just a few, maybe 3 minutes left in our creative conversation this morning, LaVon. Tell me what's
the
next
for
you.
The time went so fast.
I know. It usually does. So tell me what's next. Where do you go from here? Your new business, you said you launched it. You have your logo. Is it time for you to launch the name of your new company?
So I launched a new business. However, I launched it in the fourth quarter. However, in the fourth quarter, I took an extremely hard financial loss that, you know, disabled everything. And so, you know, in business, right, especially when you're producing, oftentimes, you know, I have to go out there and collect the resources to even be able to get a production done. And so, in taking a loss the way that I did, what is it has done is convoluted the communication between me and the client and the business associates and created a hostile situation. Excuse me. So what I've had to do in business, you know, you win some, you lose some, but I feel that, you know, a good run is better than a bad stance. So I have to start another company.
And we're going to hear more from you about that company. And I don't know, I always suggest people as consultants or business consultants like yourself, and a specialist as yourself, form limited partnerships instead of being with one partner, you know, because you become the sole owner of your company or your business. So, I mean, I'm just going to kind of give you that kind of advice, you know, because this we go through these levels of changes. And as a consultant, I really feel like I need to have creative control over my intellectual property and my client base and how I work with other consultants. And that's the critical question and the fatal flaw in doing business with people is, do you ask that question first? Can I do business with this person?
I definitely think that. And I think that all of that comes in the initial negotiations of how we proceed and everything. I think, you know, in business, you also have to look at that.
This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening.